meet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life, because the Mets are really sucking the ball.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Alongside Paul Kuharski, I'm Jonathan Hutton, David Reed, making the show happen for us. And from time to time, as we broadcast live from our home offices during the social distancing and everything else that's been going on, we've invited some guests that we've never had on the show before to join us via the magic of Skype. And today's guest, it falls right in line with that. Really cool to be joined by Howard Johnson, Hojo, who played 14 years in Major League Baseball, one of the most well-rounded hitters in the game. And he's since been a hitting coach, both with the Mets and Mariners organizations, most recently for the Nashville Sounds, working in the Texas Rangers organization. Hojo, what's up, man?
How you guys doing today? All right? Doing all right?
Doing great.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
86 Mets, such a famous team. We're hearing so much these days with all that's going on socially about how a healthy locker room kind of reflects what America can be. We've also heard a lot about what that 86 locker room was. Maybe not your most conventional group of guys coming together. What was that locker room like? Obviously, when it counted on the field, yeah. You guys were all together. But behind the scenes in the clubhouse, was it a kumbaya locker room?
Yeah, you know what, guys? It was pretty good locker room. It wasn't always kumbaya. The main thing is we all basically pulled for the same thing, and that was to win. And we did back each other up. Everybody backed each other up, no matter what. If somebody was challenged by, you know, another ball club or whatever, players wouldn't hesitate to go fight. You know, they'd want to, you know, we got a lot of fights that year. And a lot of that had to do with just guys having each other's back. So when things happened, you know, things escalated quickly on the field. But we were united in the fact that we wanted to win, and that was our driving force.
Hojo with us on the Midday 180. Hey, Howard, if you don't mind, if you will go back to the area of the home you were in when you first answered this call, I think we'll have a better reception internet-wise. Okay. And while he does that, Paul, I'm curious from your perspective as the Yankees fan, are you in 86, are you pulling for the Mets or Red Sox?
The Howard's going to hate this. In 86, I was a junior in high school. And so I'm a huge Yankee fan. They were not good at this stage. And I hate the Red Sox, obviously. But there are no Red Sox fans in my high school, right?
Right.
But I have to deal with Mets fans. And so I choose to root for the one time in my life for the Red Sox. And then I watch Bill Buckner with the error. And it was torture in my high school to watch my Mets fans, Howard, come out on the right side of that. So you guys caused me a lot of grief. What was it like to take over New York, which is always more of a Yankees town, but not in that decade?
Yeah, not in that decade. And it was weird because when I came over from the Tigers, I was told, you know, that New York was the Yankees town.
We'll have to reconnect with Howard and maybe have him call in, Paul. That may be the next thing. We have tried to set this up. We tested last night, and sometimes it just doesn't work it out with Skype.
I'll send him the phone number here, and we'll pick up right where we left off there. Sorry about it. Like we said.
No, that's fine. I mean, it's out of our control on that.
The things that happen. So, or I'll send
I'm
David
sending you the number right now to get him to call in on the fly. Just how we're having to do things now, broadcasting from home, unfortunately. But I can't wait to get back into the conversation with him. You mentioned, you know, as a Yankees fan, having to pull against you know, the Mets because of everyone that you're in school with, and they happen to be playing the Yankees rival. But he was drafted by the Yankees and then turned down the contract initially. And it was like the 23rd round, 24th round. And the next year, he was the 12th overall pick in the draft by the Tigers. That is quite the leap.
Yeah, I didn't know the Yankees part of that at all. But I knew he came from Detroit, and I knew, you know, he and Ray Knight were big figures, obviously, on the Mets in 86, which was such a successful team. And then I knew in New York, the Mets fans who finally got, you know, what they wanted, expected that they should have gotten more. That's one of those teams that was very good that people felt like they didn't get as much out of, you know, should have gotten multiple championships out of a team with that talent. And didn't. I think we're reconnecting here on the phone.
Yeah, Reed's getting them on. I'll pass along that the NFL teams have sent out some other memos. They're being told they're forbidden from post-game interactions within 6 feet of each other.
That's not going to hold. It's just not going to hold.
There's no jersey exchanges between players. That's also going to be prohibited. Also, according to News Channel 5, Metro Nashville schools to begin the school year remotely as COVID-19 cases surge. Again, that's from News Channel 5. We have reconnected with Howard Johnson Hojo by phone. Thank you for being patient with us as we do this virtually on the show here, Howard.
So you were talking about the Mets over New York and what that was like. Pick up there, please.
Yeah, the Mets, I mean, when I got over there, I was, you know, alerted that this was a Yankee town, that New York was a Yankee town. And but it never felt like that because the Mets team was on the rise. The organization was on the rise. Some great players in Strawberry, Gooden, Keith Hernandez, you know, that we traded for Gary Carter. So we had this influx of talent to go with the younger players, and Ray Knight ended up having a great season in 86. So, but things were, we were a curious bunch basically by the people. And so everything we did seemed like it got a lot of media play. You know, every home run was a curtain call. Teams hated that. It became every team we played was like a rival at that point. And so it was just fun to be part of that group and to go through all that stuff, because nowadays, you know, you don't really have maybe Boston and New York in some respects, but you don't have the same kind of rivalries, I don't think, that we had back then.
The 86 series, game six, describe your vantage point as the ball hit by Mookie Wilson went through Bill Buckner's legs. Were you on deck?
Yes, I was on deck. I was waiting my shot. The thing was, we'd already tied the game up, so all the pressure was off of us. And so it flipped so fast, you know, being down to your last strike a couple of different times. So all of a sudden, there was no pressure on us. All the pressure was on them. You could see it kind of unfold. When the ball was hit, I thought Mookie had a chance to beat it out. And, you know, Shea was a tough infield back in those days. It's not like they are now. Nowadays, they're like pool tables. They're so nice. But back then, Shea was a rough infield. And the ball will eat you alive if you are passive on it when you're going to get it. And any good infielder will tell you, you know, you go get your good hop. And so what happened with Buckner is that he got caught on his heels. And he had bad legs. And he was wearing these the very prehistoric Nike high tops that they made. And, you know, he wasn't moving around too well in those things. And so he got caught on his heels, and the ball just skidded on him. And when it was going to the outfield, I just threw my bat in the air and jumped and knew we'd won the game. It was just an amazing feeling at that point. But, you know, just to kind of see that, it's almost like slow motion in your mind replaying it, and I can still play it. I can still see it clearly in my mind.
Howard Johnson with us. Hojo, legendary player for the New York Mets. Dykstra describes in his book that he was sitting in the dugout having a conversation with you about how you couldn't believe in the middle of that game that you, his quote here, you were going to lose the effing World Series. And then the Diamond Vision scoreboard at Shea accidentally flashed up. Congrats, Boston Red Sox. Oh. And then that series of events unfolded that became a legendary moment.
Yeah, well, part of that whole exchange was Carter was going up and down the dugout to everybody on the bench saying he wasn't going to be the last out of the World Series. And he just kept telling everybody that. He'd look you in the face, get about 2 inches from you, and let you know that he wasn't going to be the last out. And that was his mindset. And it certainly played out that way. And I was standing next to Lenny, and he and I were talking, and I'm thinking to myself, there's no way it can be over. I just can't see it. Not after everything that had happened in the postseason prior to that. And we come back to a point where we had a chance to take control of the series and to let it go. I just never thought we would lose. That was my mindset that I had about that team. I never thought that we would lose, and that the best team always seems to come out on top, and we were the better team. And so all those thoughts are going through my mind. And of course, you got Gary doing his thing, and I'm standing there next to Lenny, and we're just kind of watching what's going on. They put on the scoreboard, you know, congratulations, Red Sox, you know, World Series champions, and we're like looking over at their dugout. We're kind of like taking it all in. You can see these guys like celebrating in the dugout almost with two outs. And man, just to have it end like that, it's just got to be a gut punch. And we felt at that point there was no way we could lose game seven, and there's no way they could beat us. So it was pretty amazing.
Howard Johnson, our guest, how nervous do you get when you hear that Lenny Dykstra is writing a book?
You know, I love Lenny. He's a classic 86 Met guy, and the fact that, you know, Lenny was when he came aboard as a young guy, he very, very brash personality, player, very confident in himself, hated losing, always figured out a way to land on his feet. He could make something almost happen out of nothing. And that he lived his life that way, you know, after baseball, and, you know, got in some trouble and stuff for sure. But during the time, it was an admirable quality to be around people like that, that refuse to lose, that know they're going to win all the time, that will fight you tooth and nail till they win. Good example is, you know, Lenny never played golf in his life until he became on the team. And I wasn't much of a golfer, but I played a few times with the guys. And so Lenny was a gambler. That was his big deal. So he's in our card games, we on the planes and stuff and in the hotel rooms. And, you know, Lenny on the golf course basically would start betting from the first hole on. And every hole he lost, he doubled his bet. He doubled his bet. So he finally won one. And that was the way he did things. And it worked out for him a lot. And you know what? He pushed it to the limit. When he went to Philadelphia, he changed his body. He did anything he could. He wanted to be the best center fielder in baseball and be the reason why teams win. And that kind of attitude has to be there if you're going to be a champ.
You went 30-30. Was that an 87, I'm thinking? And you hit 36 homers in 87, the most ever for a National League switch hitter at that point in time. That 36 got, you know, beat and beat and beat and beat. But those numbers in that era were hefty. What's it like to look at them now? 30 and 30 was a big deal then too, which has become a lot more commonplace. When you look back, 36 home runs for a switch hitter back then, a huge number. People almost doubled that, the home run record almost doubled that now. What do those numbers mean then? And what's it like to look back at them now? And in the context of what people do.
Yeah, I think from, you know, I always look back on the 30-30s as being something that I never set out to do them. When they told me I had a chance to do it, I'm like, okay, that's awesome. When they finally told me like how rare it is. And yeah, the home runs, to me, I'm more proud of the stolen bases. That's the thing that's such a grind. Like you have to have the mentality that you're going to be safe, that you're going to go when everybody knows you're going to go. And you have to keep coming back, keep coming back. You got to play tough. You got to make your focus on getting on base and different things. That's how I had to do it to be successful a hitter. But the home runs were just, to me, I always learned when I was a kid, my dad always told me, so, you know, home runs are line drives that you just miss. And so I always thought about that. And anytime I wasn't a huge person, I was 5'11", you know, in my heyday, I was probably 190 pounds, 195 maybe. At my best, and you know that. Now nowadays, guys are like weightlifters out there, so I'm not the guy that's going to hit the ball out to all parts of the ballpark. I was primarily a pull hitter, and I used to kid the guys like when they, you know, would hit balls like 500 feet, you know, BP and stuff. And I'd say, well, they all count the same when they go over the fence. So there's, you know, I just tried to be as best a hitter as I possibly could and do things to help the team. Yeah, the 36 home runs, the 38 in 1991 that led the league. I think Matt Williams was behind me. I think he had 33 or 34. It was reasonably close, but not super close. And I think in the American League, that's when Canseco and those guys were putting up 40 and 50 homers. And, yeah, so 38 was a big number. 36 was a big number. And, yeah, it's just crazy nowadays to see it, that, the ball is so much livelier. The ballparks are way more hitter friendly, on purpose. And, it's just a different game right now.
In 2019, how fortunate that events lined up, things lined up, that you were working for the Rangers and the Rangers had become a Rangers affiliate. And there you were hitting coach for what happened to be your hometown minor league team.
Yeah, it was weird. That stuff never happens. And it, sure enough, it only lasted a year. I wish it could have lasted longer. I enjoyed my time with the Rangers. It was fun. I love the people over there, and they just went a different route. I think they were trying to get younger in a lot of ways. And so, you know, their organization went through a little bit of an overhaul, and a bunch of us got let go that shouldn't have been. And the industry has changed somewhat in the way that they are trying to do things analytically, you know, just strategically, how they want to approach offense in the game and stuff. And you know, look, I'm all for stuff that works, and I'm just not convinced that it works yet. But the thing is, it's on me to understand it and apply it when necessary. And so I learned a long time ago that fundamentals are fundamentals for a reason. That means they never change. They're always going to be there. Win, lose, or draw. And when you have trouble, you go back to those. And so, you know, the fundamentals of baseball are always going to be the same. You got to pitch well. You got to play good defense. And all you got to do is score one more run than the other guy. And so how we do that, and it plays out differently every night. There's no formula that you can just follow the script on every night and say that. You just have to play those three parts of the game the best you can, and you know, keep your focus on that instead of the other stuff, and you'd be okay.
It's not just young pros that you've influenced, but you own Showtime out in the Cool Springs area, a great facility where guys can get swings and cages and field grounders and the like. My son's spent some time over there. Your son Glenn's giving him some hitting lessons, and you guys field some teams there. My son's teams played against some Hojo elite teams. How much do you like influencing younger kids, 8-year-old, 10-year-old, and the like?
I love it. I love it. I love being around these young kids that are hungry. And you know, I like all the ages, all the age groups. I've spent some time with some of the early teenage guys, the 13, 14, 15, even the 12-year-olds. And I've teach about, I don't know, probably got 5 or 6 kids that are like 10 or younger over there. And we just love, Glenn and I both, we just love to, you know, be positive influence on them, spiritually based if we can, and, you know, do the best we can for the community. And we started our baseball program over there. We got our Hojo Elite group. I think we got about 10 or 11 teams now, different age groups. You know, our goal is to provide an atmosphere of learning and fun. And we try to help kids develop. And when I work with young kids, what I enjoy the most is kind of like fixing things. I like to watch what kids do. There's so much stuff on the internet now that, you know, parents can be just absolutely swamped with things. And what I try to do is I try to simplify as much as possible and use video and that sort of thing with kids and show them, you know, proper mechanics now, because if you learn proper mechanics now, by the time you get to be 14, 15, 16 years old, you know, you're going to have those building blocks already in place that your swing is going to be there, that you have a chance to be a good hitter. And you're not trying to correct major flaws at that age, which can be very difficult. So, we spend a lot of time with that. But I enjoy it. I think I love talking to parents and trying to, you know, get the kids to have the light go on, so to speak, in their brain. It's awesome.
A Mets legend, Howard Johnson, has been our guest. Hojo, thank you for the time, man. It was great going down memory lane a bit here.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, man. Anytime you guys want to talk, I'm always available. I'm a baseball guy for sure. Love the NFL too, but you know, I'm right now baseball's getting ready to crank it up. So you know, I'll be down there at Showtime 5 days a week. So come see me.
Appreciate awesome, it man. Very much.
Thank you.